Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the City of Morro Bay Public Works Advisory Board meeting. And it's Wednesday, May 29th. We're at the Morro Bay Veterans Memorial Building, and we have a quorum here. So, first of all, we will start with committee, if anybody has any announcements or presentations, starting with John on my right. Tori?
I do not.
Okay, and seeing none, we will go down to approval of the minutes. Anybody?
I move to approve the minutes as stated.
I second it.
Okay, we have a motion made by Steve, and a second by Tori. All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Okay. They're accepted, and so now the next item on our agenda is the director's report. Start again with John. You want to start?
Hey, Rob. Hey, John. I had a few minor questions. What do you mean by us? Under the consolidated maintenance report, you've got street, dig out. What's meant by that?
Could you tell us what page you're on, please, John?
I'm looking at page 2 of 2. No, page 4 of 50.
So consolidated maintenance is basically our dry side of public utilities maintenance, so it's streets, storm drains, street lighting, facilities maintenance, and parks maintenance.
Okay, and what's a dig out?
Oh, a dig out?
Yeah, is that where you go in and clear out failed base and
where there's a pothole in the street and we dig out the pothole, put base in, and then do hot mix asphalt or cold patch, depending on what's available at the plant.
Okay. I know I sent some comments or things in for some pavement. Actually, it was base failures I saw over on the north side. What happens with those comments?
They get put on our work list, and as our crews go around, they make those repairs.
Okay.
Unless they're too big for us to do, and then they get added on to our pavement management plan list.
Okay. So, like on Elm, there was this one point where the heaving was close to 6 to 8 inches, and I've seen that the garbage trucks have pushed it down a little bit since then, but is that probably too big for you guys to work on?
No, we've done that. It depends area-wise, typically.
It was about, say, 4 by 30 feet.
That's probably within our magnitude of work. If it's like an entire street, then...
it looks like there was a joint between them.
Yeah.
Okay. That was one thing. Next one is on page 11 of 50. It's pavement management. Okay. Based on the last few years of the pavement management plan, will there be any adjustments on, the ongoing estimated cost for pavement repairs?
Actually, what we're doing is revising our pavement management plan this year completely. Mm-hmm. So it's a rewrite of the plan to reassess our... the last pavement management plan didn't take into consideration what we've been doing lately, basically sealing techniques, because mm-hmm. reconstruction is unaffordable. So we'll reassess that pavement management plan and have new unit costs.
And you said the Ponderosa experiment. Is it Ponderosa where you dug it out or rototilled it and
and did a triple layer on top of it. Yeah. It seems to be holding up pretty well. So, but we don't get a lot of traffic on that street either. So it may be appropriate for some, you know, streets that where we're not seeing any traffic that are perhaps their PCI is like Ponderosa was in the 20s or 30s.
Okay.
A pavement condition index. So that's a scale of pavement condition up to 100. We're averaging, based on our current assessment, in the 60s right now is our average pavement condition. Yeah. Although we are re-looking at some of those, we may have been a bit optimistic on some of those conditions. Just because you do a chip seal on the street does not bring it back to 100.
Might do you six. Take from 60 to 70.
But. Yes.
Okay. Capital improvement plans, page 13. And that, you know, I had a similar thing. So you are kind of looking at the cost for the various repairs and working out some sort of revising your program for.
Yes.
Okay.
And we'll likely not try to do a street rehab project in the fall winter this year. Mm-hmm. We'll delay it for two reasons. One, better weather and not have such a stretched out program. Mm-hmm. And then two, to get into the next asphalt rubber grant cycle.
Okay. So I was looking at the capital improvement plan, and it looks like you've essentially sacrificed storm drainage repair. What sort of effects do you expect to see with that?
So storm drains are an interesting animal. They're kind of like a utility, but there's no dedicated funds for storm drain work. It's coming out of the general fund. There just is no funding available for that work. So these projects that are listed come out of our One Water plan where we assessed it, and we'll probably continue to have the same. For example, if we don't construct the Kern anchor, we'll see the same flooding conditions and heavy rainfall events near the roundabout because water back in the day was diverted down Kern and east on Morro Bay Boulevard towards Willow Camp Creek, thinking that was a better way. They didn't complete a project in the 80s that would have basically taken that water to the ocean.
Okay. So the result of this will be probably ongoing flooding and things like that?
It'll be no change in the conditions, basically.
Okay.
And we'll handle existing storm rate drain repairs like we do right now, basically as a semi-emergency project, you know, make the repairs as necessary.
So if I remember rightly, you spent about $33,000 this year, and it'd probably be, unless something really unusual happens, the same order of magnitude to do emergency repairs in?
That $33,000 is planned for next year to begin the. We have some development review fees that we need to spend, so we're doing some design and planning work, and then we'll work on funding those storm drain repairs, or construction. But we can't do anything without a design first.
Okay. Let's see. So we're going to get a bocce ball court in, where was that again?
So the lot next to the Public Works Community Development Office, it was kind of an overgrown landscaped area that was at one point in time maintained by volunteers, but has now been at least temporarily going to be a bocce ball and greenhouse, and Morro Bay Active Adults and Morro Bay in Bloom are helping to fund that.
Okay.
Are they helping to fund the entire thing or just the greenhouse?
The Morro Bay in Bloom is the greenhouse. Active Adults is the bocce courts.
Page 22. We're replacing Morro Bay Transit Bus. What is a PTMISEA?
I'll let Janine answer that question. I can't remember what that acronym stands for. I'm sorry.
I can't remember it entirely. It was a state, Prop 1B, a funding source. And something along the lines of public transportation, modernization, improvement, and beyond that, I can't remember the rest of it.
Okay.
It's so now only known by its acronym. Nobody can remember what it stands for.
Okay. And the funding source, it was derived through bond sales. So cities and counties were allocated a certain amount of funding. We would apply for those funding amounts, and then whenever a bond sale would occur, we would get those funds for the project. That the PTMISEA funds, the Prop 1B funds, are now completed. There's no more. This is the last of those funds that will be utilized, and that funding program has finished.
Okay. Well, that's everything I had on my notes here, so thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay, on the capital budget or director's report, particularly the proposed capital budget, page 19 and 20 of 50 for the water reclamation facility, there's that number, $33.6 million, on page 19 as well as 20. And I'm wondering if that correlates to the Bartle Wells report, table 7, where it's that's the 2019-2020 capital improvement number, which in table 7 of the Bartle Wells report is $43 million, and this is a $33 million. Are those the same numbers, but that's been revised since that Bartle Wells report?
Not having the Bartle Wells, I believe so, because we were had not completed the 30% design work on the conveyance system. So I think we've refined those numbers down.
So it's gone down?
Yes.
And is this coming, well, would that number come, so that's, is that, that's the report from, what are they called, Phelan's
Black and Veatch. They're our design-build contractor.
Yeah.
So this page is a summary of the what we expect to, how we're going to fund our $33.6 million in this next budget year of the project.
Based on the latest from Phelan's.
Phelan's Black and Veatch, and also that's the WRF facility itself. We also have a conveyance system that we'll be finalizing design and beginning construction on this next fiscal year, and then design of the injection well component is also included in this.
In that number.
In that number, yes. So it's just what will be of the project, of the $126 million project, roughly, what we'll be spending in this next fiscal year on the project.
Right. And that $126 million project includes all those things you just said.
The conveyance.
The injection, the facility, the water reclamation facility.
Correct.
Those are separate from the conveyance and injection.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, that report is scheduled. Has that just come out? I mean, its last meeting was 30%, but they're supposed to be delivered to the council this month. It was said somewhere. that report was to be delivered.
So the basis of design report is what the 30% plans are for the facility. That was reviewed by council, and there was about $1.8 million in net change orders to the project that were also approved by council at that time.
Okay, and so it was from that base report that, again, these numbers are
coming. That's what built this budgetary number. Those change orders were included in our budget.
Okay, good. Just wanted to clarify that. This leads to another question that I asked you last time offline, and I think it might just be worth repeating. Is there a formal option for adjusting water rates ex post to proposed and adopted rates that accommodate differences in the actual cost versus projected cost? So, in other words, if it was $43 million projected for this budgetary cycle, but now it's actually $33 million, I mean, at some point, rates will cover. Rates are part of the overall financing package, and if the finances come in lower than expected, could it be possible for the rates to come in lower than expected?
Likely, our financing costs will be much lower than we're expecting. We've been included on the state revolving fund intended use plan, which is 1.7% currently loan amount. So they've included us for a $100 million loan and $5 million in grant. The Bartle Wells financing package assumed that no SRF and that we would be bonding for or issuing COPs. In my mind, they're kind of the same thing, but there's a little bit different structure to make up the difference between the WIFIA and our cash on hand. So we'll have lower financing costs. Council will review that rate structure during this next fiscal year and make recommendations for rate adjustments next July.
Okay. Sounds good. And I'm just wondering if there's any plan or I was trying to correlate, say, the Bartle Wells study, the Morro Bay One Water plan, which does not include the injection or WRF facility, as far as I can tell. There's a lower number there than $120 million. It's like a $60 or $70 million estimate on that plan. And then as the actual Falonk and Vetch plans come in, there's sort of this ongoing sort of work in progress is sort of changing all the financial numbers. I'm just wondering if there's a possibility to create a chronology or a formal record that reconciles the numbers as we go forward.
Yes, so we'll be bringing Bartle Wells back on board to assist us with this financial piece of the project. So the One Water Plan includes all the capital for the water and wastewater utility outside of the WRF project. So it's a 20-year capital program for replacing of pipes, pump stations, water tanks in the system over the next 20 years. We have three projects that in our capital budget, starting this year in our capital budget, that start to address those. They're actually a roll-up of the first 5 years' worth of projects because it doesn't make sense to do some of these projects on their own. We're doing the engineering on a bunch of pipeline replacement projects first instead of doing, 100 feet of engineering on a pipeline and then building it. we're doing all the engineering on
up front across,
and
the
then
projects.
We'll bid it out in probably three segments. So we have the Beachcomber area sewer line replacement or repairs, kind of the main street of Tascadero Road sewer line repairs, and then repairs associated with or water system improvements associated with Nutmeg Tank. So it's replacement of the tank, some work at the Elena tank and booster stations, and some piping to get additional water up to that pressure zone.
Okay. Good. I think all my questions. Yeah. Thank you. Thanks, Rob.
Thanks.
Yeah, I just have a couple of questions, Rob. It's on page 11 of 50, and under the Highway 41, Main Highway 1, it says if funding gap cannot be closed, look at interim signal alternative. If you do put in a signal, would it only be temporary? It seems to me that's a lot of money spent to go back and think about a roundabout later. Maybe I'm missing something.
It would have to be a truly interim signal to make that work. So it would be using the existing road geometry and
but plunking. You're talking $3 million or something.
I think probably a little less than that.
Okay.
But it would still be a decision that a difficult decision to make. So the roundabout is about a little over $7 million in estimated cost at the current time. We have $3.5 million secured. Excuse me.
But I assume only as a roundabout, not as a signalized
intersection.
Correct. Okay.
Because of the source of funding is CMANC, which is air quality funding, and a signal doesn't have those air quality gains to them, it wouldn't be eligible. We may be able to exchange CMANC for STIP funding, State Transportation Improvement money.
So you are looking at, if you did go the signalized, it'd probably truly be interim.
Yes, it would, because it doesn't have the design life of a roundabout.
Right.
It has a design life to about 2030, where the roundabout takes build out.
Okay. I gotcha. And then the second question is the one right under it, pavement management. And it speaks to the, because next year's program will include a complete revision to plan incorporating sealing techniques. What are these sealing techniques?
So we do, lately we've been incorporating from the low end microsurfacing to the high end triple layer.
So it's the ones you have been
using, but they're not addressed in our current pavement management plan.
Oh, okay.
When we wrote that plan, we were very optimistic on funding. And it dealt with conventional road improvements, so grind, overlays, reconstruction.
So it's the sealing that we've seen done.
Yes.
I thought you were coming up.
And these techniques have, in the last 8 or 9 years, have become more prevalent in California. I don't know if it's just because of the costs of reconstruction and the advancement of the technology that is being used.
It appears with the triple cape seal, it looks like a very durable alternative to it. I'm just wondering if it was a new sealing technique that
hadn't been used yet. No, it's what we've been doing, we're incorporating that into the menu of options for streets and for better planning purposes and budgeting.
Oh, okay. I think my other questions got answered by what you got before, so I'm done. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, just a couple small questions. on page 4 of 50, I think it said the total service requests completed were 337. I just know one of the city goals was communication level. Do you guys, you have the categories broken down, but do you categorize at all how the requests came in? So if the app or the websites, the notify me if the service requests are coming in volume from those, or if they're just coming in by email or phone calls?
I don't even know if we, somebody behind me might have the answer to that question, so I'm going to phone a friend to see if we have the capability. I don't know if that our software tracks that.
Okay. I just didn't know if it had an input, you know, like, right, this was a phone or this came in, you know, by the app, you know.
So. I'm sure we can track that. I don't know that we do.
Yeah. I had a question.
I'm sorry. I was going to say the city website, there are certain analytics that could be looked at, and they would identify whether a click occurred on a particular page. So that's something we could look into to see whether the page that links to the app in that service request from the website, but from the app itself, like if you have it on your smartphone, I don't know that.
Yeah, I just meant from the communication aspect, if, you know, out of 337, five of them are coming from the app, you know, did we pick the right vehicle for the audience, you know, or is this something that has to be looked at and adjusted?
Well, currently this program that we're looking at here, this is actually the program when staff has determined that it goes in. So this might not be all of them, that the services that we are requested from the customers. That is another program that we use. It's actually linked to this, but this is after the fact. This is when city staff has determined that it is a service request. It is something that we have to work on, and we put it in. Now, that's something that we potentially could track here, but it might be better suited for our other software.
Sure.
And then we'll see what analytics we have and see if we can come up with a sample that we can share.
Yeah, it's just curiosity.
Time.
Yeah. Page 6, it said that up at the top on number 2, there was a CAL FIRE text alert about flooding. So does that CAL FIRE text alert come directly to the city staff, or how does that work?
Yeah, CAL FIRE, that's how we receive all our after-hour call-outs on the water side. So we actually receive text messages via our on-call phone, and we respond that way from the dispatchers.
Okay.
Yeah, so CAL FIRE provides dispatch services on the fire side for the city. So any sewer or water after-hours calls that we say you dial 911, you say it's a water or sewer or flooding issue, you get routed to the CAL FIRE dispatch, and rather as opposed to CHP or sheriff.
Sure. And then I had one last question on the water conservation. I think we talked a while back that from the aspect of water conservation, there had been increased new water permit fees around new construction at one time. Am I wrong on that?
Water permit fees?
Yeah.
We had during the water required water conservation, we had a program, a requirement where you either put some BMP in place that would save water, or you could pay an in-lieu fee, and council, after the governor declared victory against the drought, rescinded that part of the resolution. So we don't have that as a requirement in construction anymore.
So has there been any increase in new construction permit fees for offsetting, you know, the One Water and the wharf project? Obviously, we've talked about, you know, the bills for people who are currently connected to the system, but I didn't know if there had been any increases on new construction going forward for making up any of those differences.
Our finance department has a fee study underway now, so we'll see the results of that in the next couple months or so, because the One Water Plan had a section that attributed a portion of the costs of these improvements to new development and some to existing development. So the fee consultant took that into consideration as they were looking at our fees.
Okay, great.
I just have a curious question, as usual. On the transit page, on page 5 out of 50, it says in the triennial performance audit that over the past 7 months, you've been working on the triennial report. Was there a problem with that, or is this a typical length of time to work on a on the report.
So no, it's a typical length of time. What the auditors do is they come out, they do an initial site visit, they gather data, then they ask us for a lot of other data, and we provide that to them, and then they go through and have other members of staff who go through the operations, the financing parts of it, and they do their evaluation of the prior audit and any recommendations that were included from that and the progress that's been made or completion thereof. They look at the state requirements that we're supposed to meet and identify whether we've met those or whether we've not. And then they come up with some, usually one or two kind of recommendations to carry forward to try to make the system more efficient and effective based on the review of the prior 3 years. Oh. So that is kind of a typical time frame, and it's actually a sort of a short one.
Oh, really? I was looking, thinking 7 months to complete this. Was there an issue is what I was thinking.
No.
So, okay. Thank you. And back on page 8 of 80, we're talking about operations and maintenance of the wastewater collections. And the on-call staff received after-hours call-outs. One of them was the rock restroom backup due to a power outage. So curiosity again. Is that automatically reported that there's an outage there, or does somebody, you have to wait until somebody opens the restrooms in the morning and finds it? I mean, do these physically have to be called in, or is there an alert system that's on the bathrooms at the...
Yeah, on the rock restroom, that one does have to be physically called in. That there is a power outage, but the consolidated maintenance staff does check that daily. So okay. What had happened there was a pretty much a citywide outage on that side, and the bathrooms were continued to be used, and we wound up. There's a lift station there to pump, but we're actually looking into actually putting an alarm and a lockout on the water system there. So when that does happen, it doesn't continue. So.
Oh. Okay. That was just my curious. Okay.
I have a couple more questions from Troy's comment.
Okay, John.
Carry forward projects, are those projects which were initially scheduled for the previous year?
Yes, those are projects that were in this fiscal year that are not completed, and we're carrying forward the remainder amount to this next fiscal year.
Okay, and then accumulation fund is those funds which...
The balance in that fund.
And each of these projects have their own accumulation fund?
Not each of the projects, but each of the... if it's an enterprise or water fund, water has its own accumulation fund. Sewer has its own accumulation fund. Our assessment districts have their own accumulation funds. So,
and then the last question is, what is the Morro Creek Restoration Project?
That is an erosion repair project. We were in the 16-17 storms. We had some erosion damage along there. FEMA came out and assessed that and wrote us a check for what they thought that repair would cost. And we're now going through the permitting on that. Okay. So they, when they did their estimates, they assumed rock slope protection along that creek bank. Coastal Commission doesn't care for rock slope protection, so we're looking at a softer approach, geotextile and plantings.
And, of course, you signed off on the estimate when it first happened, right?
We agreed with their estimate. It looked reasonable based on the quantities that they would allow. And they only, as you know, allow for restoring it back to what it was, unless we go for a mitigation project to make it better.
I am way too familiar with that now. Okay. Those were the other questions I popped up. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions? Then we'll move on to the Cloisters Landscape Evaluation. And before we start this, I was asked to have anyone who present tonight who lives in the Cloisters. We would appreciate it if you would sign a paper in the back, at the table in the back, so that we would know who's here from the Cloisters development. Thank you. And Rob?
And that's completely voluntary.
Okay. I said we would appreciate it.
Yes,
I didn't
thank
say we're
you.
Forcing.
thank you, Madam Vice Chair, board members. This is a project that we've been discussing with doing something regarding improvements to various landscaped areas for a few years out in the Cloisters Landscape Lighting Maintenance Assessment District area. This was the landscaping was installed with the development in the 90s, and it's getting a bit long in the tooth. So it needs some looking at and replacement of plant materials that perhaps were good when they were put in the 90s, but perhaps not so good now. City staff does not have the resources to make this assessment, so we issued a request for proposal. There were two respondents. We selected and awarded this contract to Oasis Landscape, who has prepared a draft plan. We looked at six different areas, the medians, parkways, planters, the turf area, the area adjacent to Highway 1, and the actual parkways in the neighborhoods. And I'm going to turn it over at this point to Brian.
Scott.
I wasn't sure.
The other one.
The other one, who will introduce himself formally and go over the draft findings of their report.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you, Rob. First of all, I'd like to thank the city for giving us the opportunity to be involved in this process to help improve the Cloisters landscape, and also the Public Works Advisory Board for having us, and also from everyone in the neighborhood that showed up tonight, and we appreciate all of your input. My name is Scott Wright.
Sorry, Scott.
Everybody, sorry. This is Michael Kripe. We're both landscape architects that work for Oasis Associates in San Luis Obispo. We've been in the practice locally for over 30 years, both here locally and throughout the state. Like Rob said, that we've been retained to provide analysis and recommendations for the public use areas and right-of-way landscape areas throughout the Cloisters development. Our aim is to provide a comprehensive analysis document that identifies areas of concern and provides recommendations for possible upgrade and or renovation. This includes the planting, irrigation, grading and drainage of the landscape areas, as well as ideas for the revitalization of the park amenities. I assume everybody has received a copy of the draft report that we've prepared for your review.
Oh, yeah, thanks.
Now I'll be walking through our findings and recommendations contained within the document, and then perhaps at the end of our presentation we'll have a question and answer session. As many of you are aware, and I think also Rob mentioned, the Cloisters development was originally constructed in the mid-90s. And while the design guidelines that accompanied the development provided a framework for the architectural and landscape elements, many of these elements have, you know, unfortunately outlived their usefulness and have shown their wear and need to be looked at to be upgraded or replaced. Let's see. Go to the next one. So this is a map that shows the six areas that the city has identified that's within our scope for us to evaluate. Just to give some frame of reference, north is pointing to the right of this particular map, where Highway 1 is on the bottom. Coral Avenue comes off of Highway 1, connects the two major neighborhoods together, the neighborhood to the north of Indigo Circle, the neighborhood to the south of Emerald Circle. In the center between the two neighborhoods is the Cloisters Park, with the dunes to the west, which is the top of the planned site right there. These six areas were prioritized according to a set of criteria that we've somewhat developed. This criteria is, number one, is the current state or condition of the particular area. Is it in badly need of disrepair and in need of replacement? Number two was concerns of public safety and accessibility. The third is availability of funds for this particular improvement. And the fourth is the public use or a highly visible area. So the six areas that we have identified, number one is in the orange there, and that's just the center medians along Coral Avenue, and also the entry median going into the Indigo Circle neighborhood. Number two would be the parkways on either side of Coral Avenue. It's basically a smaller strip of planting between public sidewalk and then the multi-purpose trail. Number three would be the Cloisters Park planter areas. These are the planting areas that are somewhat around the play structure and then the restroom. It doesn't include the play structure at all, but it's just the planting, the current planter areas around that. Number four is the Cloisters Park play area, the large turf area to the west of the restrooms. Number five is the Highway 1 tree buffer, which is pretty much the open space area between the highway and Coral Avenue. That's shown in purple right there, number five. And last of all would be the neighborhood parkways, which is the parkway landscape space directly fronting each lot's homes. Plus, there's a center median at the end of Emerald Circle in pink there. Our overall goals and objectives for our involvement in this project and the subsequent final analysis document would be to work within the budgetary concerns and constraints. Number two would be to reduce water use. That would be a big thing, taking a look at each area and seeing how we can effectively do that. Number three is reduce maintenance costs. Man hours, all go towards these budgetary constraints. Number four is to increase usability of public areas and trails. And lastly, we'd really like to take a look at how we can enhance the landscape and hardscape aesthetics. We started this project with an initial programming meeting with the city, extensively reviewing each area within our scope, identifying their concerns and opportunities, and lastly, listening to the maintenance crew and their scheduled maintenance activities. Now I'm going to quickly run through each of the six areas in priority, highlighting some of our main findings from our site analysis. First up was the Coral Avenue medians. Everybody that's driven through there can see the amount of dead plant material through there. Not only that, we have a lot of overgrown plant material, which definitely goes towards the maintenance issues of trimming them back. Maybe the plant material might be getting too high, which causes site distance issues. Because of a lot of the dead plant material, we have a lack of cohesiveness in the plant palette. So things have died and been replaced by something else, and just the entire streetscape along there really lacks that unity of plant material. A lot of the areas have very narrow planting beds. That makes it very difficult to effectively plant and irrigate those small, tiny areas. A lot of the large mounds that we see in the medians, while they look nice, they have the boulders and the nice large mounds, they really create sightline issues, especially for people pulling out of the park, and also for maintenance personnel, maintaining these areas. Irrigation-wise, there's a mix of spray and irrigation, spray and drip irrigation, excuse me. So, just taking a look at how we can effectively and efficiently, provide irrigation to these plants. The Coral Avenue Parkways is the narrow strip. It goes from 12 to 3 feet wide in between the public sidewalk and then the multi-purpose asphalt trail. And due to you know, the pedestrian biking and running through it, it's really hard to effectively have nice-looking plants or irrigation working in this area. So a challenge is to what can we do with this little narrow strip to make it, one, look really nice and you know, work within the running and jogging that it does. The park planter areas were originally called the demonstration gardens. These were, you know, planted areas connected by decomposed granite trails that gave the homeowner, prospective homeowner, an idea about, you know, what plant material looks good, you know, that could also look good in their yard. Through the years, these areas have been degraded just, you know, by, you know, rain of the decomposed granite. They've eroded and plant material has died. So a big concern here is to how do, can we make this look as nice as it did when it was first installed? Can we find a way to maybe reduce plant material and reduce the amount of irrigation going to these areas? Is there a way that we could take a look at any of these areas to be more useful, maybe more tables or chairs or usable park areas? So these are the things that we were kind of looking at with that. The play field is the big open turf area to the west of you know, the park. Overall, it looks, you know, looks really nice. There is a slight rodent problem that we can, you know, effectively deal with. The main thing here is providing, you know, irrigation coverage to that. So these are things that, you know, we're looking at as well. The high one tree buffer, everybody has probably seen that. There's a lot of erosion that's taken place. A lot of stormwater runoff from the highway comes down the slope. As this picture illustrates, it's you can see a lot of the real erosion that comes off of that. So we need to effectively deal with, one, just the way it looks, maybe how stormwater effectively comes off of that, and if we can do something nicer for that area. And lastly, the sixth area would be the neighborhood parkways, which all the homeowners seem to have taken over the parkways, you know, putting their mark on their own space in front of their house, which a lot of them look really nice. We would like to see maybe, you know, going back into the water use, maybe we can effectively use a little bit more hardscapes like flagstones, gravel, in addition to just the plant material. One of the other big problem areas is the larger planter median at the end of one of the cul-de-sacs. A lot of the plant material has been overgrown, taken away. Looks like some of the neighbors have taken upon themselves to replant it again, which is really nice. So I think we're going to take a look on how we can effectively, you know, replant and re-irrigate this area to make it look nice once again. Now we're going to maybe the funner part is maybe some of our recommendations. This is our kind of our initial thoughts about how we can maybe treat some of these areas. And of course, with, you know, we're still coming up with, you know, some other ideas as well. Going in order of priority, once again, Coral Avenue medians. We'd really like to, you know, like I said, reduce the amount of water use and plant material. We can accomplish this in a number of ways. We'd really like to add a little bit more hardscapes to the median, a design of the median. We can do that by adding cobbles, more boulders, maybe gravels or DGs. And if we can get maybe a 50-50 mix of hardscape and softscape, that's going to really go a long way for, number one, making it look really nice, still make it look like it belongs there, reducing maintenance, reducing water use, and so forth. Second thing we really like to do is to reduce the amount of the mounding that's occurred in there as well. I mentioned the sight line issues coming out of the park. So I think if we can remove 12 to 18 inches off the higher mounds, and especially where you're pulling out and you're looking both ways, if we can raise and lower, or I'm sorry, lower that, that's going to, you know, help public safety. This is a plan that shows maybe the layout of the cobble and the boulders and how that we can put that all together in a really meaningful design. We're using, you know, a little bit more succulents and a mix of like natives and succulents, which I'm going to kind of go over quickly a plant list that we've initially developed later on. But this just kind of just shows a general layout, and we can get more creative with maybe some other type of rock elements. This is all, of course, budget, you know, if we have the budget for these items. But this is just a way to treat these medians and anything else than just plant material. We don't have to rely so much on that. The second area would be the Coral Avenue parkways, and you know, in, like I said before, it's everybody kind of going off into the next pathway. So our recommendation is to put a hardscape material in here. If we could do something more creative, like maybe a paver or some other type of, you know, decorative material, that would be great. It's just very hard to effectively irrigate and plant these areas when it's all the same plane and people are going back and forth. The park planter areas, like I said, are the areas that are outside of the restroom and outside the play area. We want to create, you know, something a little bit more at this park than the destination at the park is, you know, people are going to be walking, bird watching, taking their kids to the park. But also thought it'd be a really great idea to provide a central gathering node or a space. Small groups could use this space, bird watching groups, elementary school students coming out there to take a look at the wetlands, neighborhood, you know, use. So if we can maybe create some sort of central gathering space. This particular perspective or vignette is on the north side of the restroom. So it's taking out the decomposed granite pathways, all the plants that have been degraded, and maybe creating just a space with a little bit more hardscape, less planting, but give it a reason for being there. We could do something fun and artistic, like put in some shade sails. We do need some sort of, you know, cover there. And I think this really just makes the space. This next slide is a plan view showing this same area about how the restroom is that square or a rectangle in the bottom, but how we can just integrate this space in with fixed seating, maybe a stage area, maybe a little backdrop to the stage, and just really kind of just provide a central gathering, a destination for this park. The south side of the restroom and also the play structure, we envision this to be more of a gathering barbecue area. There's really no space for maybe groups or families, large families, to sit at tables together. So we can propose, going with a shade sail aesthetic, maybe more pavers and decomposed granite, reduce the amount of planting in these areas, and just really make this side, you know, a more usable space. There's a lot of single tables and benches scattered throughout the park. But if we can provide more of a centralized gathering space, I think this would be really well received. Area number four is the play turf play field. There's one DG area that has a couple tables in it that just over time has been lots of weeds growing in it, so it's just extra maintenance to maintain it. We propose to maybe even eliminate this area if we do provide a larger group picnic area. Excuse me, this area could be eliminated. This would help in maintenance of the area, of the turf. I'm sorry, go back to this. We do have another idea for, reducing the amount of rodents out there as well. Excuse me, get some water. It's an easy flow. It's a proprietary thing that we can get into probably later, but it's just another idea that we're bringing forth to help control some of the issues out there. The Highway 1 tree buffer, this is a view kind of looking more northeast towards the highway, but because of all the erosion that's coming down the slopes, we're really concerned about over time it, you know, degrading even further. So an option is to you know, throughout some larger boulders, nestle them into the slope, maybe add some pockets for some planting. There's a way that we can bring irrigation out to this area, put in some natives that would require very low water use. But it's just to enhance that side of the development. And lastly, the neighborhood parkways. There's a lot of really nice examples out there. People have really taken ownership over that and really putting their stamp, into it. And we would really like just maybe add some more hardscape out there, or maybe provide some more examples for the homeowner to see, well, I could, you know, treat it this way if I put in a boulder here or a flagstone here. But maybe just give a little bit more examples for the homeowner to go for. We have a lot of different ideas for the entry medians going into the neighborhood, and also the roundabout or the cul-de-sac, excuse me. These are some of the plant pallets. Like I said, these are kind of initial thoughts, just looking at really what grows out there, just with our experience and really seeing what plants are growing out there now, what are successful in the long term. We consider long-term maintenance, you know, very essential. Water use, obviously essential. And just what is really going to look nice out there, you know, as a pallet. I think I'll just sum this up by saying thank you again, and I'd be happy to answer any questions anybody might have.
Thank you, Scott. Very nice. It looks nice. Did anybody here have any comments? Okay, let's start this end with Christian this time. Did you have any questions or comments?
Just a couple. Was there any discussion of a baseline budget?
Not at this point. So this.
Okay. So, all in all, the design. I just had a couple questions. Did we observe any of the usage of the facility? Yes. The current, you know, folks, citizens that use it. You know, because we talked a little bit about what your design is and some of the pods and lifestyles. I just want to know if there was any observation done. Okay. Did you meet with maintenance or the current staff that is maintaining okay. And then was there any surveying of the closest homeowners in the area?
Not at this point in time.
Michael, could we ask you to come up to the microphone so folks in the back could...
I thought I was yelling loud enough, but I guess not.
It doesn't... You can't hear it on the broadcast either.
Okay. At this point in time, this is the first kind of group meeting and user meeting. So this is how we present it. Everybody has, I've been seeing they get copies of it, and so just kind of open now for everybody's discussion.
Sure. And one last question on the neighborhood parkways where we have a lot of the homeowners maintaining it. Where does the water come from? Is the irrigation coming off the individual meters of the homes?
Currently, it's the actual main lines are in. Mm-hmm. I would say that I'm not sure what the percentage is that actually works as far as the city's, you know, main lines. There's a mix of drip and spray, and I would say that it's all there. And again, you'd have to. We did look at most of the irrigation valves, and again, it's a mix and match where sure. Some of the homeowners have taken their own systems and done it, but it's still functional. From what it appears.
But it's fair to say that the design going forward at this time is city-produced water or city-paid-for water on those areas?
Yes.
Okay.
I was just going to follow up. Does the assessment district actually have to pay, or is the city actually paying?
The assessment district is
so
part of the city.
In all fairness, it's not the city per se, but you collect it. I only had a few questions, and the first one's on the Coral Avenue parkways, and it caught my attention because you were in the original report it talked about asphalting that section in between the sidewalk and the bike path. My big problem, because I've ridden bikes out there a lot of times, is the fact that you're taking away any kind of greenscape where a dog may urinate when the person's walking on the sidewalk. What you're going to find is everybody will be out on the bike path on the east side of the bike path in order so their dog could sniff every bush as it walks along. And that is a problem when you start mixing up pedestrian, because you have a class one bikeway there. And by asphalting it in, it just becomes a wider sidewalk, as I see going forward. The other concern I had was, you know, kind of goes counter to every LID development. Instead of trying to make the area more porous, you're making it more impervious as a result. Now, I don't know if you factored that in or looked. Maybe it's a very small percentage of the overall. I do not know how much you're truly talking about when you talk about that, but that is a concern. It concerns me that you've basically taken a separated sidewalk and bike path and turned it into one big paved area, so to speak. And the only other thing, and it came up today, I didn't even think about it, but you talk about the boulders along that slope, and we just heard about Coastal Commission jerking around on Morro Creek where they won't allow rock slope protection. So I'm wondering how they're going to perceive, if you're putting in boulders, I wouldn't do all boulders, if you follow what I'm saying, because I could see you getting slapped on that aspect. And that didn't even come to mind until I heard him talking about the Morro.
Yeah, we were trying to kind of fill the voids where the real came in.
No, I could appreciate why you're doing it. I've dealt with these kind of things for years. I'm a civil engineer, and I've done development projects all along. But those are the only two real concerns. I can't speak to the budget, and I assume that's why there's such a large audience tonight, because I assume they're footing the bill as part of their assessment district. So I honestly like to hear from them when it becomes the public forum for that reason, because while it's beautiful and sounds like great ideas, I'm not footing the bill. I don't live there, so I live, in the downtown area. So I reserve judgment on everything until I kind of hear from the people that live out there. Thank you.
I think it looks great, and I think landscaping is beautification. It's a very welcome development, so I'm all for it. My only very small concern is the along the Highway 1 buffer there, and just I see you're looking at Monterey cypresses, which are great trees. I don't live there either in the cloister, so I don't know if I'm valid to make a suggestion, but I do live up on the other side of the freeway. I would like to just see not a complete barrier between highway and the neighborhood, but actually still see the ocean through the trees ultimately when they're grown.
Yeah, if you looked at the sketch, there's little vignettes, so it's very few trees, but it was just trying to, bring a little bit of pedestrian scale to it. Right now it's just all open.
One of the things I like about shopping at Spencer's is at the parking lot you can see the whale spout, so I want to still be able to do that.
Okay. Thank you, Tori. John?
I had a few questions.
Yes, I had a few questions. As for, large group use, there's two or three school trips to the ocean, the day at the beach, basically, from the local Del Mar Elementary School. You'll get about 200 kids there. So they plopped everybody down in the middle of the lawn, and what tables they were, they put the food up there, and the kids would circulate around. It was not the best situation for the kids. It wasn't too bad, but that would, if you want to find out about a large group who would use the area, go talk to the school, the Del Mar Elementary, and I imagine even the high school go use it occasionally.
I don't know.
One of the things which I've noticed when I've used the park with my grandsons was it gets windy. And has there been any thought of providing a little bit of barrier to the northeast direction for providing some calm areas?
Yeah, it's a very tough environment. It's a tough situation right there. And mm-hmm. you're trying to juggle, view corridors and everything through there, with wind protection.
What I was thinking was at the places where you do those sails, what do you call them?
Shade sails.
Shade sails, maybe you could drop a 6 foot in those areas there to divert the wind a little bit.
Yeah.
Probably more of a hardscape wind screen. The plant material doesn't really do much protection.
I was just thinking of the shade screen.
Yeah,
itself.
Right. Yeah, so a diffuser for it.
Mm-hmm. You had some pictures of pretty large boulders out there. So you'd repurpose those boulders if you took them out of the median.
Yes, and anyone else they can find, the ones they're not going to use at the other place, I guess we can take those over there too. The Coastal Commission doesn't want.
Okay. I haven't walked there since I got back, but there used to be a pretty intense pampas grass invasive species issues there around the park there. Was there any talk about maybe apparently the some local groups will go in and remove them. I think Rick Deschler would do that occasionally. But would there be any coordination of identifying the pampas grass to remove? Because you really don't want to.
I think that was probably more in the native areas that you're talking about. Yeah, we didn't really address that. That was not a part of the scope, was to get out in the native areas. But that should be addressed, though.
And I think I have one other comment somewhere. Let me see. No, I think I've said everything I want to.
Okay. Thank you. I'm like everybody else on here. I don't live in that area. These plans look great, but I'm not paying for them, I don't think. So what we need to do is hear from the people in the audience. So I think we need to thank you. Thank you, Scott and Michael.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Stay in the building, please, because I'm going to open it to public comment. Is there anybody from the public that would like to speak on this issue? Just come on up and say your name and give us your thoughts. Is there a paper up there to sign in? Your name?
No, there's in the back.
No, there should be.
It's right here.
And a pin is there?
There's a pin here.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Susan Weibel. I live on Indigo Circle. My question is, on the parkway, we have maintained ours. We have a beautiful rose collection along the parkway. If anyone wants to come by and take a look, will those be removed and different plantings put in? We've maintained the sprinkler system. And back to the water, several times I've called the city to tell them that the water keeps going on in the parkway, and no one has ever come out. I've had people come to my front door and say, hey, your water's running. I say, no, it belongs to the city, running down the street. So that is an issue with the sprinkler systems and the drips. But my main question is, can we keep what we have in the parkway, and how much is this going to cost? The plans look great. I'm all for improvements because it brings up the property values of everybody in the neighborhood. Thank you.
Rob, since this is more of a discussion and getting idea thing, can we address each of these after their comment is made?
Either that or we're taking notes here and we could address them. I can quickly address the parkway issue. Okay. Of course, you can keep what, if you're maintaining it, we're not going to go in there and rip out the landscaping that you maintained. We'll work with our maintenance staff on making sure the water is, if somebody is irrigating it on their own and wants to maintain that, we'll cap off those that irrigation there.
Thank you.
Good evening.
Hello.
My name is Christina Gigante, and I live on Emerald Circle, and I'm thrilled to hear that we're going to be able to keep what's in our parkway. I got Diamondi in there, and it works really, really well. It's invasive, but it's filled the space, and people can step on it and walk on it, and it's been wonderful. I just wanted to bring up one point to the gentleman here about one of the plants that they have in their listing. They've listed a splurge, and we had that in our backyard, and it was very, 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 very happy. And it produces seedlings that you would not believe. I've spent more time weeding. I'm still pulling weeds of them. And when you break a branch on it, the liquid inside the sap is corrosive. It peels my skin off. And so I just wanted to make sure that people were aware that this might not be the ideal plant. I mean, it's a beautiful plant. My only challenge was I've got seedlings like the little yellow flowers that pop up in the city. And the spare space is that this just might not be a really good plant, you know, because kids are going to run into this, and you don't need this on their skin. And so just my experience, you know, if it wasn't so happy in this area, maybe it wouldn't be such an issue. But
could you state the plant name again?
Splurge. splurge. It's the common area, common name. It was splurge. In Area 1, I think.
Yeah, it's on the Coral Avenue medians, on the botanical name, it's Euphorbia.
Yeah, it's the big yellow clusters of flowers.
Okay, thank you. Don?
Greetings. My name is Don Beatty, and I live in the Cloisters. First of all, thank you so much for the work you guys have done and for the work you've got to get done. That's really cool. I have a few comments. First of all, the parkways have not traditionally been maintained by the owners, or many do, as you've heard, but not all. A number of years ago, the city put in a number of the parkways and fixing the irrigation and whatnot. Whether that worked or not, I can't say. Well, I can say it didn't. Some places it did, not all. Also, exiting Indigo Circle, in addition to exiting the park, is a problem. When you exit Indigo Circle, there's some high stuff also in the coral median that's hard to see over. Steve, I totally agree with your comments on that parkway along Coral. There needs to be, but even rocks better than paving. I mean, a dog will go to do a thing on rocks, or as opposed to.
If I could say, I've seen it a real problem even down near the Embarcadero, where people jump into the bike lane when they're walking or with multiple pets. And I just hate to see in this instance, I'd like to see some kind of barrier that doesn't let people cross over and still be pervious. So if dogs, they need to urinate, and those are people that are walking on the sidewalk. Otherwise, they're going to go where the bushes are.
Or they might go on paving, which...
Yeah, I mean, they could jump to the other side of the street, too, but, you
but
know, I'm saying if they are walking
with the
that
blood
side,
infection too.
It looked to me as a problem, but I'll be honest, so far everybody I've heard, I'm pleasantly surprised that you all seem for this, but I think maybe some of your concerns have to do with the price tag, so to speak.
Well,
we've been saving
for this for a long time.
Oh, okay, very good.
The assessment district that covers this has been saving for something like this.
Oh, okay.
Which is why we're able to. One of the things, though, a lot of you say, you know, I really shouldn't offer an opinion because I don't live there, but all of you heard use it.
Oh, yeah.
And the entire city uses it.
Well, that's why I wanted to hear the neighborhood per se.
If it's made better, their problem's only going to increase. It is kind of a problem for people who live there paying for things that the city is using. It's an old issue, but it's an issue I'll bring up every year with the city council saying, you know, get some skin in the game. Pay for a little bit, and every year make it more.
I'll tell you what, it's a very nice area.
I
really think it does enhance the whole neighborhood, what you got out there. And like I said, the only thing I saw from a design issue was making it impervious between the sidewalk and a Class 1 bike path.
I agree on that. The other issue that got brought up was putting in trees or something on between Highway 1 and their closest area. And that can't really be done to any degree because there's a view corridor there. The Coastal Commission insisted that that people be able to see the ocean still. This was not a highly desired activity back in the 90s. I didn't live here then, but from all I heard is the city did not want this area of nationalness converted into homes. Mm-hmm. And so there were a number of concessions made to make it easier, one of which is to still be able to see the ocean, so the trees can't get very high. Same with the shade sails. You know, there's, you know this, but there's like 14 feet limits or something like that. So anyway, I really appreciate it. I can't say again how much I appreciate this activity. And I am also curious what the ultimate price tag will be. But anyway, thank you for the time. Thank you.
Thank you, Don.
Madam Chair, if I might, if we could limit the dialogue back and forth between the dais and the public comment, we may get through this more efficiently.
Okay.
Sorry, I just heard my name mentioned. I had to speak.
Carolyn Brinkman, Morro Bay resident. I live in the Cloisters, and I've had a house there since 2014. And just recently started to use all the walkways and walk. I've covered every single, you know, inch of walkways because I just got a puppy. And so we go walking twice a day there. And the point I'd like to make is that that park is used by many, many people, not just in Morro Bay, but outside of Morro Bay. Just this week, I heard three different languages other than English spoken by people who are interested in my puppy and couldn't speak to me because they were speaking a different language. I also have two little granddaughters whose friends come from Los Osos to have birthday parties in the park. My dental hygienist from Long Beach, when I lived there and told her I was moving to Morro Bay, said, "Oh, where are you going to live?" And I said, "Well, I bought a house in an area called the Cloisters." And she said, "Oh, is that near that little park, you know, that Cloisters Park?" And so we're getting people not just from Morro Bay, but from all over. And so when you talk about us footing the bill, I think Dawn is right. I think the city needs to see this as the jewel that it is and the draw that it is. Someone just mentioned to me that buses pull in there. I mean, it really is used. I walk around 7:30, 8 o'clock at night with a dog, and I'm amazed at the number of people who are still out on those paths. And so it is very much used. I'm excited about this design, and I think it's a really wonderful thing that you're doing, not just for the Cloisters, but for the city. The other thing is the parkways. I have not planted in my parkway. I weed it. But I will tell you, I want to do something, but that soil is so impacted by now that something needs to be done to help, I think, the people in the Cloisters. That's really, I mean, we do pay for that and with our assessment, and so I would like to see some help with that. So thank you, and I'm going to sign my name while someone else is walking up.
Thank you, Carolyn. Any other comments?
Hi, I'm Cal Nishinak. I live at 2283 Emerald Circle. We built our house here in 1999. I just want to reiterate, I'm not sure that I favor more lawn in our plan. We're just coming out of a drought. Who knows how long the drought's not going to be here. We probably need to think about less lawn and think along other areas. I would definitely not be for the trees. If you were for those visitors that are coming for the first time, coming from the north, when they get to the San Jacinto stoplight and they see across, it's like a chamber of commerce minute when they see that open space and the rock. I mean, don't change that. Please don't change that. That's like all the advertising in the world. Couldn't do you any better than that. So I want to reiterate, too, the fact that it is the crown jewel of the parks from Morro Bay. And we notice a lot more people now that are walking there from other areas of our town because it's the safest park. You're never alone there. All the other parks, they're even up on Del Mar there. There are too many areas that people could hide if they're thinking about doing weird things. There in our park, there's always people there. If they ever need help, we always
We even listen from our house if there are people that need help, whether they've fallen or sometimes there are altercations with dogs. So one thing that we might take into consideration, and I know parking is a big issue there on the weekends, there's an area there against one that might be considered for a dog park down the road somewhere, because right now there's a lot of dogs that are off leash and they use our park as a dog park. And I know that there's some concern by some of the residents about that. Other than that, I love this. You guys are great. Thank you.
Thank you, Cal. Are there any other comments, suggestions, ideas?
Hi, my name is Marie Delarios, and I live in Emerald Circle. I have a question or a concern about the shade sails that are going in. What are they made out of?
Those are fabric.
They're fabric?
Yeah, but again, this is all draft, so whether they're going in or not going in, it's just up for discussion.
Okay, I have a concern about long-term maintenance for something like that, because if they're fabric, they're not going to hold up for a long time, and then they'll need to be replaced, and we'll have to pay for that. And number two, it's awfully windy there. How are they going to hold up in the wind?
They're set for 150 mile-an-hour winds, and they last about 20-year lifespan.
Okay. All right. That's all I wanted to say.
Okay.
If I can find a pen.
Oh, Cal has it. Okay, thank you. Are there any other comments, suggestions, opinions?
My name is Maurice Gendron. I live on Emerald Circle. I just had a quick question. There's a wonderful list of plants that have been provided as suggested plants. I guess my question would be if that list could be modified to indicate plants that require a lot of maintenance, plants that will grow very quickly, plants that propagate themselves, and we have a huge... So if the list could be broken down to maybe those are low, they won't grow so high, they won't expand so much. I mean, I've seen some plants already that, you know, just if they kind of take over the space. So it'd be helpful to know, since I'm not a professional gardener, the selection of plants. I don't know who's going to make that, but to be able to know, well, this is going to be a high maintenance if you put that in. It may be very pretty. And so that would be my suggestion to look into that. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
My name is Audrey Gendron, and I live on Emerald Circle.
Pull the mic down. Thank you.
So my question's about the implementation of this. I noticed there's six separate phases, and the recommendation was that each phase be done all at once. And I'm assuming that the budget that we have isn't going to cover all of them at once. So how would they be prioritized? And then is this going to be contracted out, or is the city going to implement this plan?
Thank you. I think it's being contracted out, right, to Oasis Landscape?
They are preparing the preliminary design. We will need to refine that design based on comments here and comments that we'll receive over the next few weeks. So you still, if you think of something, don't think it's too late, email it to us and we'll take those comments. Implementation, we'll have to make that decision together about what the priorities are. And as far as there are some things that city staff can do real well, but there are other things that we'll likely have to contract out. So those will be made all a part of the budgets as we move forward. So it's not a decision that we're trying to make here. We'll finalize plan, cost estimates, re-engage the community, and move forward from there. But you're right, we can do anything, we just can't do everything.
Right. Okay. Thank you.
Hi, Steve Stevens. I live in the Cloisters also, have been there a while. First of all, I'm very appreciative of the plan that was put together. I think cost considerations have to be taken into account, and of course I appreciate the communication that we've had and I anticipate continue to have with the city and the community, and I think it is important that OASIS be aware of height limitations, et cetera, as Don had mentioned, or a few other people had mentioned, relative to view corridor areas, et cetera. There's some interesting kind of proposals, but I don't know if they necessarily would be in accordance with what the Coastal Commission necessarily would accept or how viable. So I look forward to continued conversations. Through the years, we've had a lot of back and forth with various city councils just in terms of the relationship with the Cloisters. Some have been more open to communication, and some have not. And I'm very appreciative of where we stand right now. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Steve. Anybody else? This is the time to make your suggestions or proposals, or voice your opinion. Okay, then we will close public comment and bring it back up here. Did anybody else have any additional comments up here? Okay, Steve.
I'm glad to hear from the community because I think you have a community that's supportive of what's being done, Rob. And it doesn't seem, you know, they did bring up certain issues, and I think they should be looked at, especially the one about the view corridor. I'm not sure who that buffer was serving along the highway, whether it was the original intent for people on the highway not to see in or for the people not to have to see the cars going by on the highway, because it sounds to me like most people would rather see that kind of die a quick death. At least that's the feeling I got from who came up today. Well, do you remember what the point of purpose? You weren't here, I know.
I was in the area and watched this competing civil firm do this work.
Oh,
That area was a borrow area to elevate the two pods out of the flood zone, and they needed a map amendment to get them out of the 100-year flood. It's down to mineral soil, so it doesn't produce very good vegetation growth.
Right, okay.
There is a Coastal Commission requirement for a kind of an X or hourglass-shaped view corridor through there. Limits on home height and vegetation. So structure.
So the intent was to shroud the homes from people on the highway looking out towards the ocean. I mean, is that it's what it sounds like you're saying.
The tree buffer along
right,
there.
Right, that's what I was alluding to.
You know, I think if we do end up with a few trees along there, we'll have to pick fairly small variety trees that don't get that tall.
Right.
So maybe the Monterey cypress won't be the tree that gets selected, because I know based on what I've seen, and I'm no arborists, but they do get quite tall.
Yeah.
And there might be other varieties that would be more appropriate. Trees that are basically shrubs.
So do you see the Coastal Commission coming into play if you decided to?
I think if we tried to block that view corridor, definitely.
No, I'm talking about not putting trees in.
Oh, I think they would not want that view corridor blocked. So,
Okay.
And then regarding the boulders along there, Their main concern about the rock slope protection along Morro Creek was due to armoring a kind of a natural erosion feature. This is a slope that was created next to a highway.
Right.
I think we could work with them on selective places.
So you don't see boulders being a problem from the coastal?
I don't see as boulders being a problem there. And I think it would give pockets where soil could collect there and not slow down that erosional process along the highway.
Well, I'll say for the record, I like it. I think it's a good job that was done. Of course, you got to know what it's going to cost at the end of the day and if it can be budgeted for. But other than that, thank you, Rob.
So, did Christian, did you have something?
Just one question.
Is there anything other than outside of public notice for the homeowners in the assessment district for like a timeline, a Gantt chart, or any expectation of when the next communication would be for them? Any update period?
I'm going to ask Pam to respond to this because I can't remember the details of this. So Pam Newman is the project manager on this project, and she's really the one to thank for the coordination and making sure this project moves forward. Pam Newman is spearheading this endeavor right now.
Yeah, I got it. I'm a newbie, sorry. I think we discussed having a couple of them originally to even have some community days, and we haven't finalized whether or not we were going to go with that first or after we would have the draft. And so we decided we were going to go with the draft first, have something for people to discuss first instead of giving them, hey, here's a survey, tell us what you want. Sometimes that's harder for people to come up with. So we feel that if we had something for them to look at and give their feedback, it would be a little bit easier for them. So I think we had in place when we took the request for a proposal a couple of those, maybe two. But they haven't been finalized because we're sort of seeing what the feedback is. If it's really bad, then we'd have to go back to this draft. And that's why it's specifically a draft, so that people know that this is not final in any way. So I think what we're going to do is kind of look, but I think we have some ideas of possibly going one more after this. So it's a little bit of an ongoing process, sort of its own animal in that aspect, because we want to make sure and get that input.
So the scope includes at least one more meeting at our Public Works Advisory Board. That doesn't preclude us perhaps doing things without the consultant team there and staff holding events with the community. So we'll work with I'm going to task Dawn to help us set some things up for the future.
Okay. That's it? Good job.
A couple questions. If I remember, the assessment district has a certain amount of money collected. Is that adjusted for inflation?
No, it's a fixed assessment set when the assessment district is formed. $148,000, and I should know this. I just did the engineer's report, but I can't remember the exact amount. There's over $550,000 in the accumulation from that assessment district that we're going to be using for phasing this and perhaps some other small capital projects in out there.
So there's will be no changes to the assessment district?
Not without a vote of the assessees. That happening.
Okay. Is this also going to be reviewed by the Planning Commission?
Likely not. It's not really within the PC's purview. There's no permitting required.
So we will be it in order to make sure it's consistent with city requirements and stuff then?
Us this board, staff, and City Council will ultimately be approving the plan.
Okay, thanks.
Just one thought as far as the tree barrier goes. Hedgerows. There's been a lot of talk in the farming community about hedgerows as not only windbreaks but lower barriers that cultivate different kinds of pollinator and animal life, bird life, and things like that. So definitely be a not impact a view shed. It might be an option there.
I'll leave that to the landscape design professionals.
Okay. I didn't mean to sound like I was passing the buck when I said I don't live there, so I didn't really have a thing. But what I'm really glad that we had so many people from the Cloisters here to talk, because it's going to be your project, basically. Your assessment is paying for it, so I'm very glad that so many people came out and gave their opinion. Thank you very much for that. Okay, Chris.
Just one question, Rob. Are we still in July-ish doing the joint park tour with the Parks and Rec? And if so, is it possible just to add this in?
Yeah, we can stop by the Cloisters Park. We haven't coordinated that with the Recreation Commission, so we'll schedule that. Hopefully it'll be somewhere around the July meeting time.
And so now what you needed to hear from us tonight were just recommendations. And did you get what you needed?
Yes, so we heard recommendations from the residents out there so far from the board, and we'll take the Oasis will take those, we'll get together, we'll refine the plan and come back with a near final.
Okay. So we're done with that part?
That concludes.
Okay, that concludes the discussion on this. Thank you, Steve and Michael, for coming and doing the presentation. Thank you, for everybody, for coming to take part. Oh, if somebody. Okay, for those in the neighborhood, you may have these. These drafts that we have, there's no reason for us to have them.
If anybody wants a full-size set, I think there's some available up at the dais.
There you go. Thank you, Sam. Okay. And moving on to the next item, the annual water report.
Maybe just give a minute or two for the audience to clear. if you want to have conversations, it would probably be best if they...
No, I want to get home and watch the rest of Jeopardy.
We've lost control.
Is that guy still winning?
Yes.
Really?
Okay, and we continue on the water report. Rob.
Yes, Ms. Hansen, Damaris Hansen from our Environmental Programs Coordinator will be giving this required report.
Thank you. Evening PWAB members. Tonight I will be presenting the annual water report and the water equivalency allocation for the next fiscal year of 19-20. It's part of the Municipal Code 13.20 that the Public Works Department prepares this report annually. A WEU is defined as a measure of water used for the average amount of water to a single-family residence over the period of a year. And in 2016, the amount of one WEU was updated to be 90 gallons per capita per day. Due to the historic trend of the lower compared previous years. The intent of the allocation program is to regulate the addition of new water users to the city system to ensure water demand shall not exceed the available water supply. In 1984, the citizens developed an initiative called Measure F, It was a growth management system. Measure F set a maximum population of 12,200 and also set a maximum housing unit limit of 70 unit housing units. City Council in 2007 reduced this number of allocation housing units to 50 units. This Measure F also has a allocation mix of 60% of them being single-family residences and 40% of them are multifamily residences. Since the housing population has not exceeded Measure F's population of 12,200, new housing units can still be issued. And things are finally looking good for California. Our drought has, for the first time since December 2011, California is considered drought-free, according to the U.S. Drought Monitor. Even though the state lifted the drought, emergency drought, in April of 2017, the city still has requirements to report the amount of water conservation each month compared to 2013. The State Board also does continue to prohibit wasteful uses of water. Examples are watering during rainfall events, hosing off sidewalks, irrigation of ornamental turf on public street medians. And these requirements coincide with what the city's requirements are as of now. We have requirements of not irrigating between the hours of 10 and 4, no excessive gutter runoff, no washing of hardscapes. So basically they kind of align with the same of the state's conservation requirements. The city's water management plan is included in the One Water Plan, which was finalized in October 2018. The One Water Plan completed a water supply analysis, alternative analysis, and identified reliable, drought-tolerant water supplies sufficient to provide the water, city's water through 2050. The One Water Plan recommends the city move forward with Water Supply Alternative 4A. Alternative 4A would construct an advanced treatment facility as part of the Water Reclamation Facility Project to facilitate the indirect potable reuse within the Morrow Groundwater Basin and utilize the city's existing groundwater extraction. This future water supply option was identified as the most reliable, drought-tolerant, and provides sufficient water supply through the city to the city through 2050. The city also currently receives state water through the San Luis Obispo County Flood Control and Water Conservation District, and we will continue to receive state water through our current contract of 2035. So projected water supply, the California Department of Water Resources informed the state water project contractors the allocation for 2019 would be 70% of the contracted amount. This allocation combined with the drought buffer is available to make up the difference between requests and demand. Therefore, the city will receive 100% of our state water request. The state water is an interruptible source of water. State water does shut down once a year for maintenance, typically between October and November for 1 to 2 weeks, but sometimes up to a month. During the state water shutdown, supplements of water supply are from the Morrow Valley, and they are treated through the Brackish Water Reverse Osmosis Treatment Plant. For portable water production, you have tables 1 and 2 that show the historical record of water production and use. Both of these tables show a trend of the city's water consumption to be decreasing over time as the city's population has slightly increased. In the fiscal year, current fiscal year of 18-19, Council authorized 115 WEUs to be used for single-family dwellings, 20 for multifamily dwellings, and 65 for commercial industrial uses. 0.59 was used for commercial, 15 single-family, and no multifamily were issued. So, therefore, staff is recommending PWAB recommend to the City Council to allocate another 115 WEUs for fiscal year 19-20, 50 WEUs, 30 for single family, 20 for multifamily, and allocate 65 WEUs for commercial and industrial use. And I can answer any questions we have.
Okay, Steve? Yeah. Damaris. I'm a little confused. You talk in the WEU based on 90 GPCD, which is a person, on a house. Do you have a Is the WEU for the whole house, or is it for each person in the house? Because you're not putting in there the density of each. So sometimes most cities have an average density of 3.2, you know, per capita in a home or something like that. Do you have to have a WEU for every bedroom or something like that, or is it for the whole house?
To clarify, a WEU is like 8,900 cubic feet per year.
Right.
We've converted that to gallons per person per day. Also,
so you do have a density.
Our average density is about 1.9 people per.
Okay, so this is based on you build a house, you use one WEU.
Use one WEU, okay. Yeah.
The second question is, on commercial development, and I know there's wet commercial and there's dry commercial, do you have commercial that uses more than one WEU based on the fact of 8,700 cubic feet? Does it take more or does it take less usually for commercial development here?
Historically, it's taken less. There's a chart that you go through that you have to figure out how much
whether it's a car wash or whether it's a dry installation. So one WEU may not be totally used on when somebody puts a store up on the Embarcadero or something like that.
And recent history is we really haven't had a lot of brand new commercial buildings. It's mainly expansions to their business. So while I'm just going to make up numbers here.
Okay.
A commercial enterprise that manufactures widgets may use one WEU per 1,000 square feet.
Oh, okay.
Well, this widget manufacturer only put in 100 more square feet, so they get a fractional WEU that's assessed to their business. WEUs are only used for accounting for how much water we've issued. They're not used for establishment of fees or that is based on water meter size.
Oh, okay. Well, if I'm looking at 50 WEUs for residential and you got a density of basically 2 per household, you're talking a growth rate of 100 people a year. You could run probably ad infinitum, because I think your last population census showed you somewhere around 10.5 or something like that. Personally, I am for the maximum WEUs, and the reason's quite simple. You need new users because of the cost of what you're doing with the WRF and the fact you may be generating water that you need to sell. And for that reason, I'm kind of gung-ho with it and not try to use this as some kind of growth-limiting factor by reducing or, you know, eliminating, putting moratorium, I think you said, under alternatives. But I just want to make clear in my mind what the WEU, what it was alluding to, and it sounds like it's based on two people per household and those GPCDs. Thank you.
One thing that we kind of left out of the report, because it's probably not pertinent, but it may help. When this measure was passed, the city had a quite different water portfolio, and we were actually running out of groundwater. This was prior.
No, I can appreciate the past.
Yes.
I'm just talking in
so
the sense of where
we're going. So it's a completely different situation, our water portfolio today, as it was when this ordinance was established.
Right. Yeah, no, and that's why I said I think you need more users just for where the costs are going. Thank you.
I have a couple of questions. Well, just on that point, it might be interesting, I mean, to see an analysis of, particularly in the commercial sector, of WEU allocation and some kind of either tax revenue or income to that business establishment. In other words, and relate it back to water use, just in terms of paying for the WRF, if we're going to be dependent on growth to some extent to pay, not entirely growth to pay that, but if we want to see, in other words, a shop that sells clothing has a smaller water footprint than a restaurant. And maybe a restaurant generates more overall income for the city of Morro Bay, either as the city entity itself or the local economy in Morro Bay than the shop does. Or maybe the shop generates more revenue from outside shoppers coming in and buying shirts there, something like that. I don't know, but just the idea strikes me that if economic growth is in part factored into paying for a new WRF, it might be an interesting exercise to look at revenue, total income to the local economy segregated by WEU use allocations.
And, I was going to say, Tori, one thing the city does, or most cities do, and I assume you do the same, this is a planning tool, the WEU. Whether it's dry commercial, may use a certain amount, and that's built into the rate structure of their water bill each month. And then also, I think in commercial, doesn't the water usage tie into their sewer usage as a result also?
It does.
So the one that uses the more, say, the restaurant, they're going to be paying more every month.
Sure.
This is more the planning tool side of saying, do we have the actual supply
exactly
in order to feed what they're bringing in. Am I wrong on any of this, Rob? Or?
No, that's exactly what this is. It's a planning tool to ensure that we don't run out of water.
It's basically a physical quantity estimating tool. Yeah.
And the rate structure takes care of itself as to who uses the most water, pays the highest price.
Yeah.
At least that's how I would read it.
Likely you'd be interested in how we establish our system development charges in when we do our fee study, how we're apportioning the capital improvements in the water and sewer system to new development.
Yeah.
I think maybe that's what you're looking towards.
And
that fee study will be a public draft within the next few weeks.
Oh, really? Well,
yes.
I'll be definitely interested in that fee study. There's a model in my head forming on the overall capitalization and then service and income generation of the new water facility. Obviously, I mean, there's, you know, the cost of living in Morro Bay is likely to rise just as a result of higher water fees, and so that's going to impact real incomes of the residents of Morro Bay. So it's for any large capital investment that's going to last for 20, 30 years and impacting real incomes, the overall income generation capacity of the community is being affected. So I'm interested in the long term the price earnings ratio of the WRF, the financial price earnings ratio, the price to income, the capital construction costs to ongoing value of services delivered by the new infrastructure, and so and how that will affect real incomes into the future of the community. So that's kind of where that question is coming from. So another question is, it just by this chart, Damaris, that you provided, Table 1, 2018, sources of water, it looks like 90% of the water is from the state water system, and 10% is from groundwater. That's what it is.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay. And another question is, it's the same allocation you're asking us to approve this year that was approved last year.
Correct.
Yeah, we're looking for the
same number
regulation is for the maximum allocation.
Yeah, which is fine by me.
So just to clarify again, this has nothing to do with the WRF. This is just how much water does the city provide, and so that we know how many buildings we can have or how many residents we can support on this water that we can provide?
It's to make sure that we don't approve more construction than we can supply with water.
That's what I thought. That's what I thought.
And we're not up against that limit. And we're likely not going to be up against it in the life of our general plan.
Yeah. And then I have one little question here. It says, as shown on Attachment 1, no water was extracted from Moro and Chorro basins for direct distribution. But on Table 1, it shows all the water that came from those. So what am I reading wrong?
So in Chorro Basin, there is no water that gets extracted. Moro Basin gets extracted, but it's counted under the RO plant because it doesn't go directly.
So when you have it listed here under Moro and under Chorro,
mm-hmm.
What is that showing?
So if you look under the current year, it shows zero under Chorro and under Moro.
Oh, okay. But the date on this page said 1980 to 2018, so that's when I was looking from 1980, and I see all these numbers. So I was totally confused.
Oh, I meant for the current year.
Okay.
There's no water extracted from directly.
Okay. So, Tori, did you have more comments?
I'm sorry. I was just going to say then, so the RO plant usage is actually coming out of the Moro Basin. You're not using the seawater wells.
No, it's coming from Moro Basin.
From the brackish water.
Exactly.
Moro. Oh, okay, thanks.
Christian, did you have anything you wanted to? John, did you have anything you wanted to say? Okay, so we were supposed to provide recommendations.
And we would ask for a motion on this one.
To accept this allocation?
Yes, right. If you so choose.
I make a motion to recommend the staff's recommendation based on the annual water report of 115 WEUs for the next year.
Second?
I second it.
You look confused.
No, I'm sorry.
Okay.
I was thinking about something that Gina just asked
okay.
me. Sorry.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Then I guess that we are recommending or we are agreeing that you can on the recommendation of 115 WEUs for fiscal year 2019 and 2020.
Next stop for this report is Planning Commission. They get to do the same thing, and then to the City Council. Madam Chair, if I might, we talked a little bit about the costs going up for water and sewer usage, and there will be a flyer going out in this month's water bill reminding folks that happens July water bill that people will see in August. You will see the last rate increase from the 2015 plus the first year of the water surcharge. Mm-hmm. So the average water sewer bill will go from about 136 to 191.
Wow. Okay. Is that the end of the cycle then?
This is the end of the 2015 water sewer rate increase cycle, the first of the WRF surcharge that gets added on.
Because I thought, okay.
So we'll have like two raises, the last of the ones.
Yes.
Plus the surcharge.
And you'll see a flyer in this month's water bill and probably next month's water bill also reminding folks of that. And just a reminder to folks out there that when you go in to pay your bill, the folks that received that bill didn't impose that on you. So try not to shoot the messengers.
Right. Will there be a – what's the next bill? Is going to stay at that level or –
Yes, yeah. It will stay at that level. This WRF surcharge is flat
Yeah.
So it just went up to 41 and stays at 41 until we retire that debt.
Yeah.
Caveat to that, we will come back to council next July because we'll have our financing in place. Should we be successful in the state board passing their plan to fund us, we'll have a much lower cost of money, and council can make that reduction in rates.
And one thing that you didn't, this is the average cost when he said 191.
Sure. It's a single family that would use 5 units of water.
And if you're multifamily or other things.
You might pay more. Or your mileage may vary.
Yeah.
how's that, the sewer and water fees, which Morro Bay is going to be, you know, the 191 comparing to how Cayucas ended up?
Cayucas is, for their average water user, 191 and 80 cents. So we're 80 cents a month cheaper than Cayucas. Los Osos varies, but some residents pay well over $200 a month for combined water sewer bills.
We don't have to have any agenda items for next meeting. It just says
we will have agenda items for the next meeting.
But there's nothing for us to discuss.
There's nothing for us to discuss.
So we're just down to the point where we can adjourn.
Yes.
Then I will adjourn the meeting.
Thank you. Yes, we'll likely have a June meeting. Last year we skipped August. Yeah. We may have skipped June too. I think we have sufficient items to bring that need some sort of discussion in June.
I'll tell you what, I was happy when the cloisters seemed like they were all on board. I'll tell you, I thought there was going to be a fixed fee.
I think it helps that they have a fixed fee.